Evening. So last time I had the opportunity to speak to everybody here, I prepared some work on the consequences of sin. Now preparing that, I had the opportunity to work with Randy Hilburn, and I did a lot there, but this time, the first time I was presented with bringing this lesson, I had about a two-week interval before I brought the lesson. Now, I'm going to actually do a dramatization here, just so that way I don't have people coming up and comforting me afterwards. So I had 2 weeks to prepare here, and so I don't have all my material ready. I'm not going to do as well as I did last time because I didn't have as much time. The reason I say this, it emphasizes a point that I wanted to bring up, which is about fear. So I was told fear can be an acronym meaning false events appearing real. And so that's what I'm trying to say, is that that whole thing, that whole little picture I painted, that's a false event appearing real to me. Because in truth, I did work on this. I've spent a lot of time going over this material over and over and over again. I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of what it is I'm going to bring forth today. So I wanted to take some time. I'm speaking about fear. And fear, it's a very powerful emotion. Fear can breed things like sin. It brings forth wars. Fear fuels greed. You know, like within greed, someone can have a low self-worth, thinking that I don't amount to enough. And therefore, they see money. Well, money, people start to like me when I have money. And so then they start to let greed consume them because it gives them a higher self-worth. Or people will have a fear of control. I don't control the situations around me. If I can pay somebody to do something, I'm controlling what they do. There we go. Now money gives me control. Now I want money in order to control things. And if you just add the next step, I mean, in which case these things can also start to bring forth war and other things like that. So fear is a very strong emotion. However, fear is not all just a bad thing. See, fear in the Lord is a good thing. Fearing the Lord is respecting Him. Think about the rainbow. We were presented at a time way back when the world was very wicked and God flooded the earth. So now He gives us the rainbow to say that I will not flood this earth again. So in that sense, we realize God has the power to do this. But we respect Him and understand that He's not going to do this again. There's another thing positive that fear can bring forth, and this is going to be self-preservation. I'm not going to dive headfirst into a shallow end in a pool because I'm afraid I'm going to break my neck and I could die. I could get paralyzed. In the same light, though, this fear causing self-preservation can be a negative thing. It could cause you to avoid doing God's will. It could cause you to sin. If you think about the world today, there are areas where being a Christian and admitting your Christianity, you could get stoned for it. Back in Jesus' time, this was the thing that was going on as well. So there's somebody who I want to bring forth that does represent this fear coming forth and stopping them from doing God's will. And this is going to be Peter. So we're going to take a look at this in Matthew chapter 26, verses 34 through 35. So we're looking at Peter here, and this is where Jesus tells Peter that He's going to deny him three times. Okay, so again, we're looking in Matthew chapter 26, verses 34 through 35. And it says here, Jesus said to him, "Truly I say to you, that this very night, before a rooster crows, you will deny me three times." Peter said to him, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." All the disciples said the same thing too. Okay, so here we have Peter, who has given up his life to be able to spread God's word. He is serving Jesus to be able to spread Christianity around the world. Now, this is a man who is being told that he's going to deny Jesus three times this day. So, I don't know about you, but me myself, when I'm told that I'm going to do something in a negative light, I personally try to avoid doing it, if for no other reason than just to prove that person wrong. But let's take a look at how this story starts to progress here in Matthew 69 through 70. So we're still Matthew 26, but this time we're in 69 through 70. And here it says, "Now Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him and said, 'You too were with Jesus the Galilean.' But he denied it before all, saying, 'I do not know what you're talking about.'" So, like I said, fear is a powerful emotion. And when fear starts to kick in, you start to get adrenaline pumping. And instead of starting to act, you have fight or flight kick in. And you start to react instead of act. So instead of thinking through your options, understanding what's going on, you act instantaneously. And that's the reacting that I'm talking about here. That is what Peter did here. He immediately reacted to being told, "Hey, you're with Jesus." Now, I want to paint a picture of what has taken place in the verses before that led to this. You see, Jesus was taken away and was asked by the high priests, whose son are you? And he says, "I'm God's son." So these men were trying to set Jesus up for the crucifixion here. This is a very intense moment. There's a lot of emotions running high. So when Peter's presented with this question, he reacts. So we're going to see how this continues through. We're going to be reading in the next two verses. So now we're 71 to 72 in Matthew 26. Again, it's 71 through 72. "When he had gone out to the gateway, another servant girl saw him and said to those who were there, 'This man was with Jesus of Nazareth.' And again, he denied it with an oath, 'I do not know the man.'" So here, he just walks away from that confrontation. And he's asked it again. I'm sure he hasn't even gotten over the last time that he was confronted. And he reacts again. But this time he reacts a little more drastically. He takes an oath. He promises, "I don't know Jesus." He swears it, "I do not know who Jesus is." So now, again, this is the man who has devoted his life to be able to spread Christianity. And here he is promising to his lie that "I don't know Jesus." So now we're going to continue through the rest of this story here. And it's going to take place in verses 73 through 75. So again, we're in Matthew 26, 73 through 75. "And a little later, the bystander came up and said to Peter, 'Surely you too are one of them, for even the way you talk gives you away.' Then he began to curse and swear, 'I do not know the man.' And immediately a rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the word which Jesus had said, 'Before a rooster crows, you will deny me three times.' And he went out and wept bitterly." So here he is confronted again. And this time he reacts cursing and swearing. Now, for those of you who were here this morning listening to Rick Mill, we speak, he was talking about the people he works with, these construction workers who use horrible language. This is the type of language that's being taken place here now. We've got these construction worker language. This is what he's doing. He's reacting, "I do not know the man." He curses and swears now, using the kind of language a Christian should not. So the point here is just to show how powerful the emotion of fear can be. So next I'm going to take a look of an entire nation who let their fear interfere with doing God's will. I know that's a little corny of a play on words there, but so this time it's going to be in Deuteronomy chapter 1, 22 through 27. We're going to take a look at Israel here. So if you'll turn with me, again, we're in Deuteronomy chapter 1, starting in verse 22 through 27. "Then all of you approached me and said, 'Let us send men before us, that they may search out the land for us and bring back to us word of the way which we should go up, and the cities which we shall enter.' The thing pleased me, and I took 12 of your men, one man from each tribe. They turned and went up into the hill country and came to the valley of Eshcol and spied it out. Then they took some of the fruit of the land in their hands and brought it down to us. And they brought us back a report and said, it is a good land which the Lord our God is about to give us. Yet you were not willing to go up, but rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. And you grumbled in your tents and said, because the Lord hates us, he has brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us. So here we have Israel. Now, this is the same generation that was in Egypt. So take a moment to think about all it is that this generation has witnessed of God's abilities and what he'll do for them. So they start to go out, look into the land. They see this city here. They'll see these big men, and they start to cower. They start to become very afraid of what it is that they're about to face here. They said, the Lord hates us, so he brought us into this land to destroy us. So think with me down this train of thought. What does that mean? I mean, they're saying that the Lord took us out of Egypt. He had these big old promises for us. We continue through our way. Next thing you know, the whole plan was actually to trick us and kill us here. I mean, that's got to be the way that they were thinking. I mean, they're saying the Lord hates us, so he brought us here. I mean, I don't see any other way to look at it. It doesn't go along with the God that they know. You know, here's their fear playing out on them and telling them there's no way we can win. So we're going to continue reading, and this continues through in 28 through 29 this time in Deuteronomy chapter 1. And in 28:29 it says, where can we go up? Our brethren have made our hearts melt, saying the people are bigger and taller than we. The cities are large and fortified to heaven. And besides, we saw the sons of the Anakim there. Then I said to you, do not be shocked nor fear them. Okay, so here they are. They're looking at this area, and they do. They see these big men, and they think all's lost. They see this huge city, and there's no way that we could get through this. God can't save us here. And yet, they went through Egypt, one of the most powerful cities of that time. So we can see that in the next verses, they're told that God's going to fight for them, and that, you know, Moses brings back up how they came from Egypt, and Moses continues to remind these men of what God's already done for them. The same generation, they've been able to witness the pillar of smoke and the pillar of fire to guide them to the promised land through day and night. But these men are stuck in a physical world. They're seeing these big physical men, and they let that overcome them. They decide to fear the physical instead of fearing God. So we can see, after Moses gives his little pep talk of God will fight with you, how it is that things end up playing out. We're going to read in verses 35 through 38 to see if this made any effect on anything. So again, we're in Deuteronomy 1, 35, reading through 38. Not one of these men, this evil generation, shall see the good land which I swore to give your fathers, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh. He shall see it. And to him and his sons I will give the land of on which he has set foot, because he has followed the Lord fully. The Lord was angry with me also on your account, saying, not even you shall enter there. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall enter there. Encourage him, for he will cause Israel to inherit it. So here we are. They didn't end up going in. And God's upset with them, so he tells them, you're not going to inherit your promised land now. Caleb will. Caleb, he believed in me. And so he's going to be able to inherit the land. But it's going to be the generation after you, nation of Israel, that's going to be able to go into the promised land. Moses isn't going to be able to, because he wasn't able to lead this people into the promised land. And then Josh as well. Joshua is able to go there because he also believed in the Lord. So the next thing that ends up taking place as these verses continue is, after these people are told that they're not going to be able to enter the land, then the Lord's no longer on their side. They hear this and they say, you know what? Let's do it. Let's take this on. Let's take the promised land on. So before they had God, or when they had God on their side, they say, oh, we were better off in Egypt. Now God's not on my side. Hey, I can do this. So, I mean, it's a crazy perspective the way that they went about this, but that seems to be how they approached it. So the next thing I want to do is take another look. This is going to be in Israel again, but this time we're going to have somebody here who doesn't let fear stop them from being able to do God's will. So we're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 3 through 7. This is one of my favorite stories of the Bible when I was little. And again, I'm talking about David as well. I know this is like the 15th time you've heard it over the past couple months, but I had already had this all set up before I knew everyone else was going to speak on it. So I'm going to take my turn with David and see what I can bring forth with him. So again, we're going to be in 1 Samuel. We're in chapter 17, verses 3 through 7, starting out. And here it says, the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. Now a shield carrier also walked before him. So now here we have a man coming out, and he's huge as well, and he's armed to the teeth. So what ends up happening is the Philistines challenge Israel, you know, champion versus champion. Whoever wins, their army ends up winning the war, and the other army is slaves now to the winning side. So here we are going to see how Israel reacts in this circumstance. So we're going to be reading now 10 and 11. And in 10 and 11 it reads, again the Philistines said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. Then Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine. They were dismayed and greatly afraid. So here, generations later, we have Israel, and they see another big person, and they're fortified. This guy's armed, and they say, we can't do it. What are we going to do? There's no way that we can take this on. And they're scared again. So there ends up being a standoff here. But we'll start reading, and it's going to be in verses 16 through 18 of 1 Samuel 17. So the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days, and he took his stand. So this has been going on now for 40 days. Then Jesse said to David his son, take now for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to your brothers. Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander of their 1,000, and look into the welfare of your brothers, and bring back news of them. So this is where David is now entering onto the scene. David has 3 brothers who are in this war. David's son, or with eight kids in total here, and he's the youngest of them. So David's a young man, no prior training in war. He's not a soldier. He doesn't know how to use weapons of war. And so now he's going to start to enter onto the scene to be able to give word to his father of what's going on and feed his brothers and their captain. And David is just a shepherd right now. That's his thing. He's a shepherd for his father. So now the story is going to continue through in chapter 23 through, or verses 23 through 24. And it reads on, as he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines. And he spoke these names, or these same words, and David heard them. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. So David, he sees Goliath, and he sees now, he kind of gets an idea of what's been going on, and he watches these men cower in front of this man. He comes out and everybody runs away. So we'll see how David reacts in verse 26 now. In verse 26, it says, "Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, 'What will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?'" So that's going to bring me to my first takeaway towards how it is that David's approaching this to be able to overcome fear. So David, he kind of brings Goliath down. He says, "Who's this uncircumcised Philistine?" And that's what I think is a big takeaway here, because an uncircumcised person is somebody who's not a Jew. He's saying, "Who is this man without God?" That's the point he's bringing up there. He's degrading him by saying, "He doesn't have God. Why should I fear him?" So this is his approach towards this situation. He understands that man is just man, but God has the power. He knows God's role in this situation here. So that's what I wanted to have everyone take away from this, is to respect God. Now, we're going to continue reading in 31 through 33 and figure out what else it is that David is doing here that allows him to avoid being afraid by Goliath. So we're in 31 through 33. "When the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent forth him. David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine.' Then Saul said to David, 'You're not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him. You are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth.'" So he's just reaffirming my point earlier. He's saying, "Who's this man that we should be afraid? I'll fight him." And what ends up happening is Saul says, "You're no match for him. Did you see how big he is? Do you see how armed he is? You're just a small kid. He has been an army or a warrior since he was a small kid. You have no chance here." But David's not afraid by this. David says nobody should fear this man, and that he's willing to go fight him because he has God. So we can actually watch him saying this in 34 through 37. And he says, "But David said to Saul, 'Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God.' And then David said, 'The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'Go, and may the Lord be with you.'" So David says, I'm just a boy, but I had a lion come forth and took away one of the sheep. I went after it, and I was able to strike him down. And God did this for me. This is the next takeaway I want to have here. See, this event took place, and he didn't say, "Look how great I am." He said, "Look how great God is. God is the one who did this for me. And the way that he did that, well, I'll be able to do it again here through God. God will do this for me. I'll win this battle with him." So whenever we are faced with such trials, we should give our previous victories to God. For myself, like, I was facing something that I thought was kind of scary. I turned 26. I lost insurance. And about a month later, I got a job with insurance. Now, I can't say I know God's providence. I can't say that that's him. But you know what? If I give my victory to God, then in which case I can use that strength, draw from that strength, and be able to trust in the Lord in the future. Know that if I give it to him, things will be all right. I can't say one way or the other what his providence is, but I'm going to give all to the Lord and say that anything that I can do, I do it through the Lord. I think that's the point that I can draw from David here. So the next thing that I want to be able to look at is going to be coming through verses 40 through 44. This is when the battle here is getting ready to take place. And here it says, he took his stick in his hand and chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch, and his sling in his hand. And he approached the Philistine. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with the shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy, with a handsome appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field." So here it is. David's facing Goliath. He says, "You're just coming with sticks. You're not matched for me. You're not prepared for the situation here." He says, "I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to degrade your body. I'm going to give your body to the birds and to the beasts." So he's trying to use this scare tactic on David. But David doesn't let that affect him. And we can see how he retorts to this in the next few verses here in this passage, which is 45 through 47. "Then David said to the Philistine, 'You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistine this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all the assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hands.'" So this is going to be one of my biggest takeaways here, and that is because he comes back with saying, you know, God is the one who's going to fight this war. God doesn't take this war on with spear or with sword. He says, "I'm coming into this with you, with God, and there's a God in Israel." So he's trusting his full life into the Lord right now, going into this circumstance. And that's what I wanted to be able to bring forth to you. He's trusting in the Lord. See, the opposite of fear is not bravery. For a Christian, the opposite of fear is trust in the Lord. So now we're going to go through to the conclusion of this story in 48 through 51. "Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag and took forth it a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead, that the stone stank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him. He cut off his head with it. Then the Philistines saw that their champion was dead and they fled." So this battle was not a physical battle. It was never a physical battle. This battle was a battle of the spirit. So David had already won before ever stepping out into the battlefield. So now I want to take one last story here. This is going to be another one that can show us how we can overcome fear with trust in the Lord. And this one is going to be back in Matthew chapter 26, but this time we're in 37 through 39. Here we'll look at Jesus. He's in human form. He's subject to the power of sin and fear, and yet Jesus can overcome them both. So again, now we're in Matthew 26, 37 through 38. And it says, "And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. And he said to them, 'My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me.' And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, 'My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will.'" So here he's faced with his death. Can't think of a more scary moment for me, myself. And you can hear he's deeply grieved. He prays, "Father, if this cup can pass from me, let it, but not as I will, but as you will." So here we can be able to see Jesus starting to ask that not his will be done, but let the Father's will be done. It shows his trust in the Father. Anytime that we're faced with fear, we should show trust in God, and we should understand that God will be able to take care of us. So another big important point here, though, is that not as I will, but as you will. If we're able to do that same prayer, then we will have no problem overcoming fear. Because part of the issue with fear, as I was saying earlier at the very beginning of this lesson, is control. So if we're able to give up the control and give it to God, in which case we have nothing to fear. So let's continue the rest of this prayer here in 40 through 42. And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "So you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." And he went away again a second time and he prayed, saying, "My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done." So he comes forth again and he prays and he says, "If this isn't able to pass from me," that to me sounds like accepting his fate. He says, "Your will be done." That's what we need to try to understand. That's what we need to try to mimic whenever we are faced with fear. So I want to take a quick overview of what it is that we talked about. We talked about the power of fear. We saw how it can fuel greed, sin, war. We talked about Peter and the way that he reacted instead of acting in the face of sin. We saw Israel doing the same thing, letting it stop them from doing God's will, not allowing them to enter into the promised land. And then we looked at Israel being overcome with fear yet again. And then we saw how David was able to overcome his fear. And how is it that he did it? Well, he understood God's power. And he understood God's role in the situation. He had also given God credit for the things that God had done for him up to this point. And then he trusted God fully with his entire life. I would rather live my life with God, and I would fear living a life without him. And most of all, I would fear a death not knowing God. When we enter into baptism, we say, "God, not my will, but your will be done, and that I trust you with my entire life." It's a big freedom there. And if you've never had the opportunity to take such a freedom, well, there's never been such a good time as now. So if you want to be able to take that freedom and be able to overcome sin, now's the time if you'd like to come forward as we stand and sing.